Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. All the news this week that happened surrounds the upfronts, which are the yearly network parties, maybe, or just it's when the networks announce like what's coming back, what's not. They announce their fall schedules, their renewals, their new series orders, all that kind of stuff. And pretty much everything that happened this week was surrounding those, which are happening the week that you are listening to this. So starting today, Monday, as you're listening to this, I'm not recording this on Monday, obviously, I'm not magic. I'm tired. The beginning of Upfronts week when NBC and Fox are both presenting today. And it's basically a time when they can like, they're looking for ad dollars. They're presenting their slate to consumers and to advertisers to sell ad space. And some cable networks had some recently this week, Bravo being one of them, my favorite channel. And then this week is the broadcast network. So NBC, Fox, CBS, ABC, and the CW. So most of the news this week, as is typical, was renewals, cancellations, and pickups of new series for those broadcast networks, which this used to be my favorite week of the year. Like I used to look forward to it. You can go back to my blog and look at like how excited I used to get and like announcing the schedules and stuff. Because it was like when broadcast TV was still like the dominant form of television, and this is not that old, like definitely within the last decade, but like even more within the last like 5 to 6 years, that like everyone watched something on broadcast TV, you know, like The Big Bang Theory was the biggest series on TV. It was American Idol. It was The Voice. And, what the hell, like Lost, you know, like these event TV series that just everyone watched. And we're kind of moving away from that. Those shows don't really exist anymore. And broadcast network is like in the toilet. It's all about streaming. It's all about like on demand, watching things when you want. So this is not that big of a deal anymore, and has changed drastically even in the last decade of how it's done. But like back in the day, if you watched TV, like this is when you found out, is my favorite show coming back or has it been canceled? And it was like, in a lot of cases, like nail biters, right? Like I remember back when I was in high school, finding out that Angel had been canceled, even though it was like one of the highest rated shows on the WB, that it had been canceled because of like contract negotiations was crushing. And it was what started my interest in ratings and TV scheduling and behind the scenes shit in general. So this past week was a lot of renewals and cancellations at the different networks. You can go to my blog if you would like, faketvcritic.blogspot.com. There's a link in the show notes where I've been like updating throughout the week live as things are being renewed and canceled. But the biggest story or the biggest renewal cancellation news of the week was from the CW. I mentioned a few months ago on the podcast that the CW is for sale. It's currently owned equally by the WB Studios and CBS Studios. And it was formed and has been over the past 10, 15 years, I forget, 15 years, maybe more, has been a vehicle for these two studios to showcase their series, but not to make money in this traditional way of selling ad space on linear TV, but to sell internationally and to sell more recently to streaming services. So like the CW has never been profitable, but as a TV station, but for its studios and owners, it's been profitable because like, for example, Netflix for years was footing the bill for the CW series, like Riverdale, The Flash, Arrow, All American, like a bunch of these shows were sold to Netflix and in as like quote unquote syndication. And Netflix basically paid so much money per episode to put them exclusively on Netflix after they'd aired on TV that they were making money off of it that way. Also international sales. So that's why you see a lot of shows on the CW that are like simplistic, like teen soap operas and comic book series, because they're easy sells internationally, especially when it comes with like IP, like intellectual property that's well known. So again, that's why there were so many Arrowverse shows on at one time, and why there are like Riverdale spinoffs and that kind of thing. But then the Netflix deal ended in 2019. So since then, the CW has not been as profitable, and now it is for sale and no one has bought it yet. But because it is for sale and because the Netflix deal has ended, a lot more decisions were made this year that were to like get rid of low rated shows that other places aren't paying for the way they used to. So there was a bloodbath at the CW this week, and they canceled more than half of their programming. And that included quite a few DC shows and quite a few long running shows. So they canceled this week 4400, which was in its first season, not a huge thing. They canceled weeks ago Batwoman, which I think I meant, or yeah. Did I mention that they canceled Batwoman? I don't remember. They canceled Batwoman, Charmed, Legends of Tomorrow, Dynasty, In the Dark, Legacies, which was the Vampire Diary spinoff, Naomi, and Roswell, New Mexico. Now, none of these shows were all that popular. Like, Dynasty was routinely the lowest rated series on TV. In the Dark was a summer series, again, never highly rated. Legacies, not that highly rated, but was like its title, a legacy show. It was a spinoff of The Originals, which was a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries, which had, so this like legacy of The Vampire Diaries being on the CW for like almost decades, I think, at this point. And then it canceled. So then that cancels three DC shows, Batwoman, Legends of Tomorrow, and Naomi. And that leaves The Flash, which is being paid for by Netflix, and Superman and Lois. And that's it. Although they did pick up Gotham Knights, which is a new DC show, kind of set in an alternate universe, Gotham City. So that happened, and a lot of the internet was upset about that. And I think part of it is to make the CW seem more attractive to its potential buyers, like that they won't be inheriting these expensive, terribly rated shows. And they're going to be moving a lot more toward unscripted stuff. And that's the times that we're living in. I think that's pretty indicative of broadcast networks across the board. You know, ABC renewed most of its lineup this week, and that included a lot of unscripted, but it also means that they're not going to be ordering a lot of new series. It's going to be a lot of the Devil You Know type stuff, where even though shows are low rated for the most part, they're going to keep coming back because it's easier to pay the license or to help or to negotiate in contracts a lower licensing fee on an existing show than it is to try to promote and sell a brand new show. CBS kind of in the same boat, where they canceled Magnum PI, which was a long running, well-known property. They canceled two second season comedies, and basically that like they're shifting gears. And instead of trying to be a network full of like these standard comedies, that they're going to try to be a network full of even more procedurals because they're easy to sell to their target audience, which is older people and international markets. Yeah, it's a strange landscape across the board on TV, but especially on broadcast networks, which again used to own the airwaves, you know, and they just don't anymore. And a lot of that is because of streaming is a lot easier to swallow when it comes to like advertising, because you can pay a fee and not watch commercials, or pay a lower fee and watch fewer commercials. Whereas if you watch something live on broadcast or on demand, you're getting almost a third of your hour-long TV shows are commercials. And younger people just aren't down with that. I tolerate it because I grew up with commercials, but like, it's rough sometimes. Like, I do watch live TV almost every day. And it's rough. Like, it really fucks with your attention span, I think, to have commercials. Cause like when we are in, you know, like our attention spans are obviously shrinking with like YouTube and TikTok and Instagram Reels and all that stuff. And Snapchat has TV shows and what have you. But like every time a TV show is interrupted by a commercial, I completely zone out. It takes me too long to get back into it. I forget what I've watched because I've watched 8 minutes of a show and then 4 minutes of commercials. Or in my case, I'm not watching the commercials. I'm like going to the bathroom. I'm on my phone. I'm reading. I'm whatever. Like I'm not paying attention. But then I've started doing something else. So I've lost my train of thought and I've stuck like, so if there is commercial, if there are commercials in a show, I'm less apt to follow it closely. So it does make sense for broadcast networks like CBS and NBC to be kind of doubling down on procedurals and things like that, where you don't have to pay close attention, because we're not paying close attention. Again, a lot of renewals and cancellations this week. So I'm not going to go through any of them like I typically do. But again, if you want to look at, you know, any, you can check my blog again. I have a running list. And then the only other thing that was, I thought, newsworthy this week was that Eurovision happened on Saturday. And I love Eurovision. I know that this is not an American pastime and people don't tip, like, you know, we're not in it. So Americans don't care. But I think it is campy, ridiculous fun. And I love it. This year wasn't great. A lot of the song, like there were too many ballads this year for my taste, which is either like a crazy bop, a ballad, or like an over the top pop anthem, which is just like a ballad on steroids. And for me, there were too many ballads, and the stuff that was weird wasn't always weird to me in a fun way. Like Serbia had a song where it was a woman like washing her hands the whole time, and she was singing in Latin. So apparently she was singing about apparently it was about how like we need to take care of our mental health as well as our physical health. I don't fucking know. That one was just like straight up weird. But then Norway's entry was called Give That Wolf a Banana. And it was like a techno song. And it was Daft Punk-ish, where it was like two guys in suits with wolf heads. And the lyrics were, before that wolf eats my grandma, give that wolf a banana, which is hysterical. And then the dance break was just like chanting yum 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 over and over, and it was so funny and ridiculous and camp and over the top. I loved it. I wanted them to win. They didn't. And Ukraine won because you can probably deduce why Ukraine won. And it's a fun time. It's insane. And like then when you get to the voting, it's so tense and weird, and like everything gets upended by the popular vote, which is what happened with Ukraine. They were in like, I think, fifth place with the jury votes, which is when each country vote gives points to the different performers. And I think they were in like fifth place. And then the public vote came in and they won. They got like 400 and something points just from the public vote, which put them like more than 200 points ahead of the second place finisher, which was Great Britain, which again, I did not like their song either, but whatever. It's fun and you can watch clips on YouTube. It's their camp ridiculousness. I love it. My top five, just in case anyone cares, you probably don't, was Norway, Spain, Azerbaijan, Sweden, and Poland. I liked all of them. So that was that. Okay. So coming up this week on the podcast, I'm talking about the Starz series Shining Vale, which I did not like very much. And also the Hulu series Candy, which I also did not like very much. So if you'd like to hear me complain, you're going to have a lot to latch on to this week. So stay tuned. I'm not sure how many people even get Starz, let alone are aware they do original programming, but they released this year a new series starring Courtney Cox and Greg Kinnear called Shining Vale. And it just finished its second season a few weeks ago. And it was just renewed for season two. It's a half hour comedy drama horror series. And I was interested in it because of Courtney Cox and Greg Kinnear, obviously. And Mira Sorvino, like, come on now. But I mean, I have not seen shit about it anywhere. No one is talking about it. I haven't seen anything on Twitter or even just like a general awareness from people that I follow on social media and that I know in real life of the show's existence. But If you are not aware of it, let me make you aware of it, even though you don't need to be aware of it because it's not very good. But I did watch the whole thing, so you get to listen to me talk about it. So it's an 8-episode, half-hour series, and it's about Courtney Cox plays a housewife who wrote a successful romance novel like 16 years ago, I think, before she had children and was married and all that kind of shit. Then she married Terry, her husband, played by Greg Kinnear. She was a alcoholic and she quit drinking 16 years ago. So this was all like pre-kids, post-career, etc. So she is newly sober and she and her family, she has two kids, a teenage daughter and maybe a teenage son. I don't know if he's a preteen or a teen. Gus and Jake. Gus is the daughter. Gaynor, Gus, not Gus. The actress's name is Gus. The daughter's name is Gaynor. And they are, in the opening shot of the series, moving to a small town, giant mansion in Connecticut because Pat had an affair with the handyman. And rather than leaving her, Terry was willing to work through the infidelity and work on their marriage, but he needed the family to be away from the temptation, or Pat to be away from the temptation of the handyman, Frank, in New York City. So they move into this giant house, and we soon learn that it is haunted, because of course it is. And, you know, just like some shit starts happening, and it's not really even all that crazy shit. Like, if you're a horror movie watcher and you're watching this, you're gonna be like, okay, what new stuff are they gonna do? They don't do anything new. It's all old hat bullshit. Now, Shining Vale is very much like a Stephen King feel. You can tell from the title, Shining Vale. It's a lot of it is a direct ripoff of The Shining, like down to the final shot of the season finale. The finale is very much a ripoff of The Shining, but anyway, I lost my train of thought. So it's like a Stephen King kind of thing. It's a little bit Amityville Horror. It's a little bit Shining Vale or The Shining, and it's a lot unoriginal. And that's my main problem is there's nothing all that interesting that happens on the show. And it, for such a short show, like I said, it's 8 half-hour episodes. So it's just like a long movie. It's not like nothing really happens until the last couple of episodes. So, I mean, I don't know. It's very slow. There are a lot of plot points that I just don't understand. And like, it's more about a theme than it is about a story. And I can get behind that. But the way it chooses to go about that, I found very confusing. So it opened, the very first thing we see in the very first episode isn't even them moving, right? It's a title card where it explains that possession and depression have the same side effects on women and are often confused for each other. So we know that this whole series is going to be about, is Pat being possessed by a ghost or a demon, or is she just depressed? And I mean, I still don't even know if they've really arrived at an answer. I think in the last couple of episodes, they definitely hint that it is possession more so than it is depression. But they kind of toe that line through like 6 episodes almost, or fully almost 7 episodes, where we're supposed to be questioning is like what actually is happening. And is it just that these women are depressed? Because we get so many different perspectives of so many different women. Like Rosemary is the ghost, played by Mira Sorvino. She's from the 1950s. And we have a whole episode where Pat starts taking drugs and invites Rosemary to write her story through Pat because Pat needs to write this next book and is on a deadline. And every time Pat tries to have Rosemary come out or to tell her own story, Rosemary ends up committing suicide. So we know that something along those lines happened, like she reached a violent end. And then once we learn more about her story later in the series, we learn about the feelings that she was going through about being a housewife and having a family. And she hated her family and her life. And we see the next door neighbor who has Faith is a religious person, but like also is very lonely and has no friends, and her husband is dead. So like maybe there's some depression there too. That it's just Pat is depressed. We see even her daughter Gaynor going through some of those same motions of like the hormonal stuff of being a teenager, but is it also depression for her that she's starting to show some of the same patterns? We see Pat's mother, we learn her backstory that she was committed at one point and was diagnosed schizophrenic, and that she has massive depression and things like that. Major depression? What's the term? I forget. Anyway, manic depression, not massive depression. It's either major. I am not a psychologist. Anyway, so it becomes also about this like lineage of female suffering. And that's an interesting angle, I think, is to like tell a horror story that is about the ways that women have suffered over generations. Like, I think you could do something really interesting with that. It's just not this show. And part of the reason for that, other than the fact that like nothing happens and what does happen is just a ripoff of other things, is the tone that the show strikes. Like I mentioned that it was a comedy drama horror series, and it tries to be all of those things, but it's none of them successfully. Like nothing in this show made me actually laugh, which is a problem. But then I was like reading an interview with the creator, and there were some things that he thought were just, that he was like, that made me laugh. I thought that was hysterical. And I'm thinking that, but it wasn't. So, okay. But the creator is Jeff Astroff, who was a producer on The New Adventures of Old Christine, which was the Julia Louis-Dreyfus CBS series, and then also on Trial and Error, which I really liked. That aired for 2 seasons on NBC. And then he also did Angie Tribeca on TBS, and Partners, which lasted like 3 episodes, I think, on CBS. And he wrote for like Shit My Dad Says. He's a sitcom writer, right? Like, and I mean like a broadcast sitcom writer, which I thought would mean that like the comedy would be like lowest common denominator, like really obvious, silly kind of stuff. But it wasn't. It was like, I don't know. Maybe this is my own issue, that whenever I see horror and comedy combined into one thing, I expect camp in a way. Like I expect either the horror to be over the top campy so that it's funny, or I expect the humor to be dark and campy because it is a horror movie. Like if you think about like the Halloween movies, especially the new ones, those I feel like have elements of comedy in them, but it's dark, right? Like it is dark comedy. Usually that goes hand in hand with like Michael Myers killing someone, but it's like sometimes the kills are humorous in and of themselves. So it's either that or it's something like American Horror Story where it's over the top. But this isn't either of those. Like the horror isn't scary. The comedy isn't funny. It's just, it's a story about a woman who's like, reaching her middle age breaking point. She's having a midlife crisis, and that manifests as having an affair with the handyman and then getting re-addicted to substances and starting to drink again, and like her family falling apart. And then it ultimately kind of ends with like her following in the footsteps of her mother, who we've been told is quote unquote crazy throughout the whole series. So I don't know, like it seems to want to be deeper and more meaningful than I think it actually is. And it wants to be tonally something that it never accomplishes. Courtney Cox is a great actress and has towed this comedy horror line very well in the past. She was in Scream, all the Scream movies, which I think are the best example of the comedy horror or of comedy and horror working well together, especially like Scream 4, I think is one of the best examples of that happening. But then like in this series, she never really finds a consistent performance tonally. Like she's either super dramatic or like she's playing up the drama or she's playing up the comedy, but like they never work together. And then when she does play up the drama, it makes the horror not scary because then the drama feels absurd in a way. I don't know. It just, it does not work for me, like, at all. And it's just like they have the son is there, but then doesn't really do anything. Like, there's no reason for him to be there. They never find a raison d'etre for the son. There's a bunch of side characters that end up going nowhere, like the editor and the son's friend's father, who's like weird. I forget the actor's name, but he was on, he's been on a bunch of shit, and he's like a legit sitcom comedy actor. And he has some funny lines, but like he's so out of place next to like Courtney Cox and the rest of the cast. I don't know. It's just, it's so weird. It's a very strange show. It is not, like I said, it's not scary. It's not funny, but it's also like not bad. Like I didn't like hate it as I was watching it. Like I watched the whole thing in a couple of sittings, and because it's kind of in my wheelhouse of like horror and it's short and that like, I wanted to know what happened, and then, but then it ends on a cliffhanger or multiple cliffhangers. So that was frustrating. And thankfully I watched it after it had been renewed. So I know I'm getting a second season. So I wasn't like angry about that. I don't know. It just, it doesn't, I'm very confused by its existence. And maybe this is why they're like Starz is not pumping money into promoting it, and why no one's talking about it is that they spent all this money on it. Like, I mean, you don't have a show with Courtney Cox and Greg Kinnear and Mira Sorvino and not promote it if it's good. You know, like this should be Starz' like marquee title at the moment, if that makes sense. Like Starz, I think, is like one of the last premium subscription networks to like not break through critically. And I think they thought that Gaslit, which is their other new drama that's happening right now, which stars Julia Roberts, and it's about Watergate, that I think they're banking on that being their big awards push. So they kind of like didn't put the money behind Shining Vale. I don't know. I don't know if that even makes sense. But like, I just feel like with this cast and with this concept, and with horror kind of having a moment over the past couple of years, that you would think that they would put some promotion behind it, but then maybe they just realize like, oh, this isn't all that great. I don't know. Because it's not, but then they renewed it. So I don't know. It obviously did well enough that they're putting more money into it. But it's just, it's strange. It's a strange show. It's unassuming. It's uncomplicated in a lot of ways, but it's just not good. It wants to be good, but it never gets there. And I don't know if that's because the episodes are too short. I don't know if it's because the writers aren't as tuned into what it should be in the way that they are. I have no, if they needed more episodes, I don't know what the deal is. If it's Courtney Cox's fault, maybe. I don't know. But what it could have been about, like I said, exploring this idea of inherited trauma and violence and depression that women go through simply because they are women, I think would have been interesting. But that's not really what the show ends up being, because it has to fit in all these different things and have all these weird scenes of like trying to be funny and not really succeeding. And like we have the son having a pointless subplot about his VR technology and singing ghosts through that. And I don't know. It just, it's not good. But again, it's not bad. Like this might be a fine thing to watch over the summer if you have just like some free time. You're like, you know what? I have a day. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch this whole series. Like it's it's a fine way to waste time. That's all that it is too. I don't know. I didn't love it, but I'm going to watch a second. I mean, Greg Kinnear. I love Greg Kinnear. He was more the draw for me than even Courtney Cox. I love Greg Kinnear, and that man has aged very well. He is very attractive. So if you're a pig like me, you could also just watch it to see Greg Kinnear. So yeah, that's that. I don't know. Maybe I'm over horror. Maybe. Like, I didn't like Archive 81 either, and everyone else loved that. who knows? But like, if you are looking for something that blends comedy and horror better than this does, like I said, go watch Scream. The new Scream is on Paramount Plus right now. So that's a better way to spend an afternoon than watching all these episodes. But also, I'm a hypocrite and gullible and stupid because, like I said, I'm also going to watch season two whenever the hell that comes out. So anyway, Shining Vale season one is now on Stars. You can stream it. Now, I don't recommend it, but also maybe you just are not as bitter as I am and you might like it. Who knows? I did not have a very good week in TV watching because the other thing that is new that I watched this week was Hulu's miniseries Candy with Jessica Biel, Melanie Lynskey. That's a tongue twister. Pablo Schreiber and a very ridiculous surprise cameo that I'll get to a little later. And it's about, which, like, again, I'm talking about a true crime series again this week after saying that they're not really my thing. And this is just reinforcing that they're not really my thing. But this show is not made as well as The Staircase was. So it really isn't my thing. But based on what is apparently a very famous or infamous murder from 1980 in Texas, when Candy Montgomery basically chopped up her friend Betty into pieces with an axe, claimed self-defense, and was acquitted of the murder. And like I said, apparently people know that this story exists. I didn't. But this is one of two shows currently in development that is about the murder. The other is, I think it's called Love and Death. And Elizabeth Olsen is playing Candy in that series. And that's going to be on HBO Max sometime this year, I think, maybe early next year. But that series actually came first. That one was in development first, but it kept getting delayed because of Elizabeth Olsen's Marvel schedule and then the pandemic. So then Hulu's Candy came along and got there first. And there's some interesting stuff happening with Candy, but that it almost has nothing to do with the show itself. Like, to me, the most interesting part of Candy is the way Hulu released it, which I thought was fun, where it's a 5-episode series. So they released one episode every day for a week at midnight. And it's kind of like a weird compromise between dropping a full season for binging and releasing episodes once a week. Because I'll be honest, I'm getting a little tired of this streaming following the broadcast model of we're going to release an episode a week. Because, like, it's a money grab, you know? It's like, if you're a person who maybe is not particularly locked into a streaming service and you, like, base it on what you are watching on that service, like, I'll give myself as an example. I got Paramount Plus prepaid for a year solely because I knew RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars was going to be on it. And I got a good deal, whatever. When my year was up, I didn't watch enough TV on that, and there was not enough happening on Paramount Plus for me to renew it. I have it again now because I got a year free through T-Mobile. Now, unless they completely step their pussies up for this time next year, I'm going to delete it again because there's just not enough output. So if you're someone who is, like, in that situation where you have a service for, like, one or two shows or whatever, if one of those shows that you keep is releasing an episode a week, you're maybe more inclined to keep subscribing as the show is releasing new episodes. But I don't like that. If there's a show that is on streaming, I want to be able to watch the whole thing if I have the time. You know what I mean? So that's what I did with Candy. Like, I did not watch an episode a day, but I started watching, I think, on Wednesday. So I watched the first two episodes and was like, okay, I have another one that I can watch, but, you know, whatever. And then I watched another episode the next day, and then I just watched two episodes over the weekend. So, like, even though I didn't watch everything in one sitting, I still was able to, you know, kind of binge it. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's the most interesting thing about the show. The rest of it is pretty bad. And for a show that is from such a great group of people and starring, like, Jessica Biel and Melanie Lynskey. So I never really took Jessica Biel seriously as an actress. I still kind of don't. But she was wonderful in The Sinner. I think she got nominated for an Emmy for it. I only watched two episodes of her season because I accidentally spoiled myself and hated the way it ended. So I didn't want to finish it. But from what I saw, she was great in that. And Melanie Lynskey is amazing on Yellow Jackets. And I mean, has always been a great, like, kind of side character who is coming into her own now after decades of acting. And that's wonderful to see. Pablo Schreiber, always great, right? So, and then it's created by Nick Antosca, who did The Act on Hulu Gypsy Rose Lee, I want to say, the little girl whose mother was making her sick and then she killed her. That show, he also did Channel Zero on Sci-Fi, which was incredible and you should go check out. I think it's on Peacock. And then he also did the second season. He did True Detective. I forget which season or seasons. And he's great. And he also did, that Netflix show, Brand New Cherry Flavor, which was not great, but was very stylish and cool looking, but whatever. And then Robin Veith, who did Mad Men. So I expected a lot more of this show, and it just was, like, not interesting. And, I mean, I think part of it is that as wild in a way as the story is, there really isn't anything mysterious or, like I said, interesting or intriguing about it. Candy admitted she killed her. It was just a matter of if it was self-defense or not. And there's no way for us to know that because, as the show makes clear, we're only getting one side of the story because the other person who knows what happened is dead. So that to me is not interesting. And there's just not a whole lot of information out there for anyone to draw on to make this series. So either you are fictionalizing things which again, this show makes clear they are doing with some title cards that, you know, it's based on true events, but it's not what happened. Or you're telling a really rote kind of boring story that does not need 5 hours to be told. Like this, the way this show was chosen to be written, I think I'm all over the place in what I'm trying to say. I think the HBO Max series may end up better because HBO Max, Elizabeth Olsen, to me, that is a pairing that is probably going to go deeper into kind of the psychology maybe of it and the cultural surroundings of the murder than this show did. Because as this show stands, it should have been a Lifetime movie. And that comes across mostly in the way they choose to tell the story, which they bounce all over the place. It's not told linearly, which is a mistake, but I think is meant to, like, try to make it seem more, not literary, because it's not a book, but you know what I mean? Like more prestigious maybe than it actually is, because like at the bottom line is that this is a ridiculous, salacious story that Candy as a show boils down to horniness in a lot of ways. It boils down to Candy was a woman who was sexually unfulfilled. So she sought out an affair with her friend's husband. And then that then led to her friend's murder. Whether it was self-defense, whether it was a crime of passion, whether she's a psychopath, whether she was led there by the culture of the time. And it's the South. It's Texas in 1980. You know, like, it is oppressive when it comes to the way that women are treated. And we see that a little bit, but not in any kind of nuanced way. The way that we see that play out is we see a bunch of slut shaming, basically. Like, even at the end of the series, the final episode, it seems that everyone cares more about Candy sleeping around than they do about her being a murderer. Like, the final moments of this episode are Candy saying, well, great, now things go back to normal. And her lawyer being like, it's not gonna go back to normal. There is no normal after this. And then someone yelling at her that she's a whore. Like, a random person yelling that she's a whore. And that is the crux of this show, is that the murder is based in sexuality. The verdict and the way that Candy was treated is based in sexuality. Her defense is based in sexuality. Everything comes back to a woman who wanted sex, couldn't get it, found someone to give it to her, and then that ruined multiple lives. And that, I mean, if this show had explored that aspect of things, of like the Southern patriarchy in a way, kind of like failing women, or the oppression of the female characters in this show to like, I don't know, to lead these expected lives. Like, we get a lot of religion in this, but then that's not really explored like at all. That how, what part did the church and the religious community that you're kind of forced to be a part of as a woman in 1980 with children in Texas, how did that play into this? How did her marriage to her husband, who didn't, Candy, I'm speaking of, who didn't seem to really like her all that much, and they were just very much roommates, how did that play into this? How did Betty's husband, Alan, who Candy eventually slept with, how did his infidelity and how did his ignorance in a lot of ways of Betty's need for fulfillment, and what was Betty's fulfillment? Was she sexually repressed, or was she emotionally repressed, or both? We don't really get those answers. And as much as the beginning of the show tries to kind of lay out Candy and Betty as co-leads in a way, of like, this is how Candy addressed her needs versus this is how Betty addressed her needs and how they both weren't met and what they did to kind of fulfill that, like to fill that void a little bit. Like, Candy filled that void by fucking her friend's husband. Betty filled that void by trying to foster a child and to give that love that she couldn't give, whether it was an emotional block or a physical block because her husband traveled so much for work and was emotionally distant, whatever it was, that she then gave that love to a child, or at least attempted to. And then there's mental health comes into this a lot too. Like, Candy's whole defense is based on hypnosis, right? That like, she unlocked this thing within her that she felt that she had repressed her whole life about being controlled by her mother. And but then also we have Betty, who probably needed some fucking counseling and was probably clinically depressed, and she never got help for it because she was a woman in 1980 and her needs weren't taken seriously. So like, that would have been a more interesting show, but we didn't get that show. We got a show that was like trying to subvert a lot of what we think of when we think of like mysteries and whodunits and things like that, and even true crime, where it's trying to put us into like this female gaze. Like, I think it's episode 2 maybe, or 3, where Candy decides she wants to have an affair, and we get this like inverse of Top Gun in a way, where like she's playing a volleyball game and just like sees all these like hairy bodies of the men that are in the league with her, and like sweaty man parts, and she just decides, I am going to cheat on my husband, lets herself into Alan's car, says, I find you attractive and I want to have an affair, let me know what you think. And then they work out the logistics of it like it's a business deal. Like, they literally have a chart that they post of pros and cons of having the affair. And it's things like, pros, we can fulfill each other's needs. Cons, we might get caught, we might feel guilty. Like, it's wild to have that kind of transactional thinking coming from a female protagonist. It's feminist in a way, but then like the rest of the series just reduces Candy to this like whore of Babylon kind of stereotype. And it doesn't really ever grapple with Alan's culpability in all of this. That like, are we forgetting that Betty's husband also was involved in this affair? Like, Candy wasn't just acting on her own impulses. Alan was as well. And then to end the series, like, while Candy is on trial for murdering Betty, Betty's husband, Alan, is in the courtroom with another woman who is living with him and who he then marries. But we don't really address that. Like, it's on the periphery. And it's because instead we have to get scenes with fucking Justin Timberlake in them. This is the surprise cameo, which like is not really a surprise anymore because it's been spoiled all over the internet. Because I mean, how can you keep it secret? That Justin Timberlake plays the deputy sheriff, whatever, in this town, and it is the strangest cameo. It took me right out of everything. And it's not even a cameo. He's in multiple episodes, but he's not credited. It's weird. like, it took me right out of it between his weird Southern accent and just the fact that it's Justin Timberlake in a TV show. It's just weird. It's so weird. And, like, obviously he's there because he's married to Jessica Biel. I don't know. And then everything about the show is just so strange. The choices are strange. Jessica Biel is fine. Melanie Lynskey is fine. The performances are fine. But everything else is just so strange that, like, because the show seems so interested in being feminist and having this female gaze and that kind of thing, to then also reduce its female characters to, like, archetypes, to stereotypes, to, like, shells, basically. Like, there is no shading in of their characterization. There is no depth. They are just there. They are just the whore and the wronged wife. They are just the, you know, Candy is the I can do it all mom. Betty is the lost in her own world in need of help mom. It's not interesting. It's not well done. Because, like I said, instead we're spending time on Justin Timberlake taking crime scene photos. It's so strange. And, like, if it had leaned into the camp, again, like Shining Vale, if it had leaned into the camp and was a completely different kind of show, it might have been more successful because it might have had an interesting angle or an unexpected angle. But it doesn't go into full-on camp. It just is, like, strangely flippant a lot of the time. And, like, there's even a line at the end, again, toward the end of the series where someone, I think it's Candy, says, that's it. And it's just over. Like, she's just acquitted and moves on, and that's the end. There's no, like, follow-up. There is no aftermath. It's just, that's the end. It's so bizarre. And I don't know, again, if that's a constraint of the 5 episodes. I don't know if it's that there wasn't enough story to tell. I don't know if the people writing and doing the story just didn't fully know what they wanted to do. Again, very much like Shining Vale. But it just didn't end up being all that good. It's easy to watch. Again, like with Shining Vale, I watched the whole thing. Even though I was never actively all that involved in it, I still watched the whole thing. And then at the end of it was just like, oh, okay, that happened. I did that. Why? Again, I've said this before, in an era of peak television when there is so much TV happening, especially on streaming, I wasted 5 hours of my life watching this show when I could have been watching something else. I could have been watching Under the Banner of Heaven on Hulu, which I'm interested in. But then every time I look at it, I'm like, these episodes are over an hour and I don't have that kind of time. Clearly I do, because I just watched the entirety of Candy and Shining Vale. I have the time. I'm just like, I have a weird block in my head. And I feel like that's how a lot of us are. Or, like, if we see, oh, this show is 5 episodes and they're like 45 to 55 minutes long each, I can handle that. Then we end up getting shows like this that are purporting and trying to be deeper than they actually are. So then we might as well just be watching Lifetime. That's how I felt about this, is that I wish it was just like a Lifetime movie. It's what the story I think deserves, because it's, again, not all that deep, but they could have made it deep. They could have explored a whole lot. Like, they could have gone outside of the two couples. They could have done so much more. I mean, even if you want to explore, like, Raul Esparza from SVU and a Broadway actor is in this as Candy's lawyer. And, like, he is in a different show, honestly. And the shows he's in is one I would want to watch. He's, like, he's over the top and showboaty and a little bit campy. And that, I think, is, like, it's a show set in Texas in 1980. It has to have some of that, like, over the top factor. It was the 80s. The 80s were over the top. It's Texas. Texas is over the top. The closest we get to camp is Jessica Biel's awful fucking wig. Maybe we needed more camp. Or maybe we needed less. Tonally, again, it's strange. I don't know. I forget where I was but it's just not that good. Oh, that's where I was. That, like, we keep getting shows like this that are not great, but also not terrible, that they're just strictly middling. And when there's so much more that we could be doing with our time, even if we're going to spend it watching TV, there's much better TV we could be watching, but instead I'm watching this. I don't know. The whole season of Candy is streaming on Hulu. I can't say I recommend it, but I don't know. It's not the worst thing I've watched either. But this is not a great week to watch TV for me. Because again, like, if I hated this, it would be one thing. And if I loved it, it would be one thing. But like, it was just there. I watched it. I will forget that I watched it a week from now. But you can watch it a week from now on Hulu. We are hitting the end of the television season, which, I mean, doesn't really exist so much anymore, but it does. So lots of finales, not as many premieres. But on Monday, VH1 has a new lineup, Basketball Wives at 8 o'clock, Couples Therapy at 9. Tuesday, Paramount Plus is releasing a documentary series by Darren Aronofsky. That's how you say his name, who did Black Swan and The Fighter. And it's about oil. It's called Black Gold. That comes out on Tuesday. On Wednesday, So You Think You Can Dance returns after a few seasons off. And then Freeform has the first of four episodes of a new docu-series called The Deep End. And they're not saying much about what it's about, but it's it follows someone who goes inside of I don't know if it's like a religious group or like a spiritual group or a healer or something like that, and investigates whether or not it's a cult. On Thursday, Peacock is premiering Angeline, which has been in development, I feel like, for years, starring Emmy Rossum. And Legendary Season 3 returns to HBO Max. I cannot wait for that. On Friday, the second half of Harriet the Spy releases on Apple TV+. Amazon is dropping the full season of Night Sky, starring J.K. Simmons and I think Sissy Spacek. All-Stars 7, All Winners, begins on Paramount Plus with two episodes. Let's fucking go. And Pause with Sam J returns for season 2 on HBO. All right, lots of finales. Buckle up. Finales this week. I'm just going to read through them because I don't have the time. 911, 911 Lone Star, The Good Doctor. Summer House, Real Housewives of New Jersey. The Resident, Mr. Mayor, which is its series finale. The Goldbergs, The Wonder Years, The Connors, Home Economics, A Million Little Things. The Masked Singer, Beyond the Edge, Halo on Paramount Plus, Made for Love on HBO Max. Law & Order SVU, Law & Order Organized Crime, and The Standard Law & Order, Young Sheldon, United States of Al, again, a series finale, How We Roll, also a series finale. Station 19, Big Sky, third season of Atlanta. Shark Tank, SNL, 61st Street, America's Funniest Home Videos, American Idol, The Simpsons, The Great North, Family Guy, Bob's Burgers, When Calls the Heart on Hallmark Channel, NCIS LA, and SWAT. So basically, if you watch something on broadcast TV, most of that is ending, and then there's a bunch of other random shit thrown in there as well. Okay, my recommendation for the week. So I mentioned in both of the shows I went in depth about this week, Shining Vale and Candy, that I wish that they would have embraced their camp factors a little more. And the camp that I didn't get from either of these shows, I am getting from Drag Race España. And then come closer to the microphone for TJ. España. I love it. Is my current favorite of the international drag races. Yes, even more than UK, because season 3 was a joke. It is hysterical and stupid. It is so stupid. Like, it is very early Drag Race, like the first few seasons of US Drag Race. It's very much in that vein of the camp factor, and it really is the kind of drag that I enjoy. Like, I love going to drag shows, and I follow a lot of drag queens who are silly and dumb and have like very gay, very campy, very absurd comedic sensibilities. And that's a lot of what Drag Race España is. It's a lot of impersonation. It's a lot of old school drag. Like, the contestant that I think is poised to win this season, Sharon, she is an older queen, I believe in her 40s. And she has that very like old school style of over the top, insane drag. Like, she's not a look queen. She's a comedy queen. She's a performance queen. She's a singer. And like, that's the kind of drag that I like. As much as I love RuPaul's Drag Race, I do not love that so many of the recent seasons in all countries, but especially the US, has been very aesthetically focused. And talent tends to take a back seat to that quite often. This was, I think, especially obvious in like season 12 10. Yeah. That like Aquaria was very talented. Evie is talented. Jada, Essence Hall, they're talented. But like part of the reason that Evie Oddly won is because like she's talented, but she's also like had a very obscure and different sense of style. And Aquaria came onto the show like as an Instagram queen, as a look queen, you know, obviously proved that she was talented in like the Snatch Game and stuff. But a lot of the challenges tend to lean on aesthetics, like, but then like the queens don't always have the shit to back it up. And I would rather have a messy, funny queen than a pretty boring queen. And the more Drag Race as a show kind of evolves, the more I think the emphasis on drag in particular is being placed on like perfection visually. You know, like the young fan base loves pretty things. They love to look at things. They're very much like, this is a wonderful picture. Whereas like older homosexuals like myself, the drag that I grew up with, God, I feel like a fucking 80-year-old lady saying that, but it's true. The drag that I grew up with was like Jackie Beat and Miss Coco Peru and Lady Bunny and Varla Jean Merman and Hedda Lettuce. And if you don't know these names, it's because they would not be on Drag Race, because they would not be successful on Drag Race, because they're not look like Coco Peru has one wig, one style, one wig. And she wears house coats, you know? Lady Bunny has one joke. She's a whore. They're queens that are not, they're not versatile, but they don't have to be because they're so fucking good. They found a gimmick that works for them, something that works for them, and they made it work for them. And that's the kind of drag that I grew up with, are like these queens that are like stand-up comedians or parodists or writers or whatever. And I think that's a lot that comes through very clearly on Drag Race España, is that the queens who tend to do well on this show are queens that embrace drag from all angles. Like Carmen Farala, who won season one, was beautiful, but more than that, was funny and witty. And the other queens who were in the top with her, especially like Killer Queen, was campy and very much not a look queen, but a talent queen, or like an all around, a well-rounded queen. Same thing this year, that like Onyx, who turned some of the most incredible looks on any Drag Race, any franchise ever. That is saying something, and that should get you to watch this. Is gone already. Sorry to spoil for you. Oops. Because she didn't always have the talent to back up the incredible looks. And I respect that on a drag show. It's streaming currently on WOW Presents Plus. You can watch with subtitles. You don't need, I don't speak Spanish. I can't even do a fucking Spanish accent, as you can hear. But they're just so entertaining. The queens are nuts. The energy is balls to the wall. It's very enjoyable and very camp. And I like, this is the show that I get my serotonin from every week. It's like doing a workout without doing a workout. Like halfway through an episode, I'm like winded because the energy level is so high on Drag Race España. So I will stop saying that now. That's a recommendation for the week. WOW Presents Plus, you can do free trials. It's not that expensive either to subscribe to it. Or like if you're really desperate, like DM me. I think I can give you my login information. Okay, that's it. So thank you for tuning into this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more news, more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a good week, everyone.